Hey there, cobblers. Today we have a special treat for you. We're going to get the inside scoop and learn a little more about Ani and her backstory. Now, this is a bonus episode, but we will continue part two of our Myth Expo on Bipolar next Wednesday, so make sure to tune in for that. Now, I do want to warn you, this episode does include some explicit language and content, so you may not want to listen with the kiddies. All right, it's time to tune in. And we're back. So we're back discussing bipolar during our Myth Expo, And we have with us Lori here, who dropped a few hints about, you know, her background. She's been helping us to dispel some myths, but learning some things about her throughout this interview that I think we should know a little bit more about. So she gave some interesting facts as far as, like, you know, CIA might be after her. So we want to learn a little more about, you know, your background, your diagnosis.
Yes, absolutely. Well, you know, some things are top secret, but I'll tell you as much as I can. my mental health journey began when I was, you know, earlier in my life. But I was first diagnosed, I was first told that I need to see somebody, like in 2007, which would have made me a senior in college. I attended Clark Atlanta University, historically black college, in the Atlanta University Center, which, you know, was like the highest point of my life. But soon after, you know, like I was first kind of bugging out, I start.
What do you mean by bugging out?
I mean, you know, and then keep in mind I was younger too, so my brain wasn't fully developed yet. So there was just a couple things that I took very extreme. Nah. At the time, I mean, I would get hyper fixated on certain things. Like I was very, very serious about certain things. So, you know, like I basically what happened was I had a serious attachment to my best friend. And what it ended up being was I was coming to the realization that I'm a lesbian. I don't like saying that word. It feels like real, like it got connotations that I don't want to be a part of. But when I first realized that I was going to live a life like that, I wanted to marry a woman and not a man. It knocked me on back because I was like, well, wait, how long has this been going on? And I just didn't know it. I was very confused, but not confused in a sense of like an identity crisis, but confused in a sense of like, okay, cool. So now I'm, you know, I have to how do I word it? Not really reinvent myself. I had to come to a spiritual understanding to get my peace. Like, you have to understand, I was very, very militant. I had trained myself to become very, very militant and to have very, very black and white goals and ways of achieving those goals. That might have been the first part of my mania that I didn't even realize, you know what I'm saying? But I was a very, very serious-minded person. Like, I was like a Capricorn to the max. Like, I'm a, you know, my rising sign is a Capricorn, and they say that my ascendant is a Capricorn as well. So I'm very, very, when I'm work-oriented, I'm very, very serious, you know? And also, I was very serious about life. I think that my religion that I was raised in had a lot to do with that as well, because I saw life as a mission, a time to do the right thing for a temporary time, because the real life is yet to come, finite, you know what I mean, beginning and end. So I wasn't really very emotional. I wasn't in touch with my feelings and my emotions, So it wasn't surprising to me that I was gay. I mean, it wasn't hurtful, or it wasn't nothing that I had to reprogram or reorient. It was like, oh damn, I was walking around thinking that this was the right and only way to live. And now I'm seeing that life is actually all of these dimensions. The black and the white is not really a thing. And that's kind of earth-shattering. It wasn't my identity. It was the identity of the world we're living in and where I fit into it. Like, damn, well, I'm thinking that that's how you attack it and that's how you get through it. It's not a get through. It's everything in between is what life is.
Yeah, to go through that while you're doing college. And I know that had to be a lot. And like trying to figure out how to go home to your family and let them know.
Right. It was just like a lot of things to think about at once, you know. But it was helpful for me, because as I started being more attracted to women, I started becoming more in touch with myself as a woman. And what I didn't realize was that my previous, this is what reconciles it all. When you learn your own truth, when you realize, when you come to like a self-realization, you can assimilate the truth and not betray yourself, like not blame yourself for thinking something otherwise before.
Yeah.
Like, I thought that being gay was wrong. I thought that a lot of things that people did was like, I was closed-minded, you know?
Yeah.
So when I opened my mind and said, whoa, those ways that you was thinking was actually limiting yourself, you know? It was just deep. So like I said, I became more feeling. I felt life for the first time, like for real ever. And it was a good feeling. And what happened was, I basically, that uncovered a lot of things that I didn't even realize was present. Like, I had mommy and daddy issues, you know, I had just like different unresolved things that I had gained resentment for over the years. Like, when a kid is like left in the dark, they start to get angry that people ain't communicating with them. You know, I just started resenting the secrecy and resenting the apathy of everything.
Started peeling back the layers, pretty much.
Yeah. I started peeling back the layers, and having a really good friend, like a really good confidant, will help you get through like that point in maturity, you know? So I thank God I had a great best friend that ended up like teaching me how to be open-minded and really giving me a great example of how to appreciate womanhood.
Yeah.
And then also being like a ear to, like, you know, understand, you know, what I was going through. So but even through all of that, I was still going through a lot of different changes. So that's what spurred it, you know. Mm-mm. That's not what started it. This is what spurred me going to the doctor, and the doctor telling me, you have clinical depression. That wasn't my first experience with depression. My first experience with depression, again, I was very, very young before I even knew what the word depression was. I remember having suicidal thoughts. And it could be easily construed as just a really melodramatic, theatrical kid that has like serious temper tantrums that are really annoying. But I was thinking I was dead serious, you know?
Yeah.
I was like a little kamikaze. Like, I was, like, I remember one time being angry, I couldn't get what I wanted, and only being tall enough to, like, for my head to be just above the kitchen counter. Like, my mom was doing dishes, and I couldn't even see the water. She didn't give me something I wanted, and I opened up the drawer and grabbed a steak knife, turned it towards me, held it with both hands, like I was gonna drive it into my own chest, like a freaking, like those Japanese.
What are you watching?
I don't know. Not too much, though, I don't think. I felt like it was balanced. I still read a lot of books.
Yeah, girl, I don't know if anime was like in like that in our community back then. That sounds like some anime. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, you know, I remember that being one of my tantrums, and I remember asking my mom, like, why am I here? Why was I born? You know, like being like really, really upset with the whole idea of like, if I ain't asked to be here, why am I without? And again, is that just an entitled child that's coming to realize like how life works? Like, or
I kind of feel like every child, or maybe not every child, but I think it's common for people with depression to have thought that before, because I know I've had those thoughts before, like, why do I have to be here? I didn't ask to be here and do this, like, yeah, I get where you're coming from.
Yeah, so I remember them kind of times. And then the first actual real, like, episode of depression or phase of depression legitimately would have been, like, in high school before I even went to college. You know, it was another, you know, phase of feeling suicidal. And actually, the crazy thing is, like, my friend attempted suicide around that time. Well, you know, she attempted suicide. And, like, our heads were so fucked up. Like, my head was so fucked up that... she told me she was about to do it. And we said bye to each other. And I'm just sitting in the living room watching TV. Yeah, so it's been some dark times, again, with no apparent cause.
Yeah, I was even about to ask the phrase that get on my nerves. Like, what led to that? Like, but, like, yeah, he's... this I felt like that over a lifetime since childhood, like the different mood changes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So then, like, you know, once I got to college, and I had to, like, you know, be productive and shit like that. It was times where it was really hard to get out of bed. Or rather, it was times to, like, it was hard to wake up on time because I would wake up before the time I had to wake up. And, you know, you try to go to make yourself go back to sleep because you still got 2 hours to spare before the alarm goes off. But after that doesn't work, you're like, okay, well, let me just get up and get an early start. You know, early to bed, early to rise, whatever the situation is. Let me catch this worm, early bird, why, whatever. I'm trying to get the wisdom in the worms.
Yeah.
But... well, what ended up happening is I'm getting dressed, I'm taking a shower, or rather, I'm taking a shower than getting dressed, sorry. Because I don't want my clothes wet, that's the thing.
Yeah.
I'd be nauseous as hell. Nauseous as hell in the shower, to the point where I haven't eaten breakfast yet. And now I gotta turn the shower head off because I'm like, okay, is it just too damn steamy in here? And I'm like dry heaving, like my stomach is like trying to like throw up whatever, nothing is even hardly in there. And I'm like, don't even really realize what this is or like why. I'm like, okay, I just have this morning sickness situation. I'm not pregnant. What is this? You know what I'm saying? So that's when it becomes helpful to have a name for it. Like, okay, you have generalized anxiety. So I have that too, but that's a later, you know, that's another topic for another conversation. But I started manifesting anxiety symptoms as I was feeling depressed as well.
Yeah.
And, you know, like,
partners, they go hand in hand,
you know. And then, like, towards the end of the year, I went to the ER 3 times, like, at the end of the semester. And one time it was like I just woke up and my wrist was just stiff and I couldn't move it at all, and I ain't never had no, like, wrist injury prior to that. I go to the doctor and they're like, oh yeah, it's tendonitis, you know. I was like, how? He was like, well, are you right-handed or left-handed? I was like, I'm right-handed. He was like, well, there you have it. Okay, so yeah, so I had a bout of tendonitis that just appeared after not being agitated or injured or nothing. And then another time I was like having chest pains, like I was having a heart attack. Again, a symptom of anxiety. Shit, feel like you're dying.
Yeah, it does. It can't be mistaken as heart attacks, like when you're having like a panic attack.
Right, exactly. And the thing is like, diagnoses are so like overlapping because I actually have a condition called pleurisy, where it's like my chest does like it'll either get dry and like tighten, like the inner lining of my lungs between my rib cage and my lungs, it'll either get dry and like rub, or it'll get like inflamed and like real sensitive. So I'll have like chest pains on one side, which is easily, so I know what it is, you know. I just take like an anti-inflammatory and keep it moving. So it's like, okay, is it this? But wait, this feels like the big one. Or, you know, you're not even considering. Nobody that's going to the hospital for anxiety thinks that they were having an anxiety attack. Okay. When they, you know.
That is the truth.
So it's like, dang, you know. So that happened. Doctor, you know, who knows what they said. Man, next time I finally had to go to the ER, man, I just couldn't get up. I couldn't. Every time I ate, my stomach hurt. Every time. It was like I could feel the food traveling, absorbing, percolating, whole nine yards. Yeah. Worst pains of my life. I'm sitting up in a chair, and I'm getting a cramp that is so, so sharp and random that it raises me to my feet. Yeah. End up laying on my stomach. For the comfort, only comfort I could get, you know, like cancel my schedule, end up going to the ER finally. And that's when they told me I had the IBS, the irritable bowel syndrome.
Yeah, so all these physical manifestations was from like your diagnosis, like anxiety, depression.
Yeah, yeah, it was. I had been holding stuff in for so long, my body started telling me in different ways, you know, you need some type of help. When things are easy and things are flowing, that's one thing. But that's when you're at dis-ease, that's when the sickness is, that's when your immunity is down. That's when your defenses are down. You know what I mean? Like your spirit literally does need to be fortified. You know, that's why, that's not why, but that's one of the spiritual implications of praying over your food. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, what we think and what our intention is reverberates throughout our body and into the atmosphere. And so I started feeling stuff. Body started betraying, not even betraying me, but alerting me that I was betraying myself.
First you went through anxiety, then IBS, and some depression, and tell us a little more about like how the depression and like when you got diagnosed with that, and the bipolar as well, like how you, when you felt you had bipolar.
Okay, so as I said, it was 2007 that I was diagnosed with depression. It was just talking therapy that was the treatment for it. Eventually I graduate, I move on thinking or knowing not very much about what major depression or clinical depression is. Like, you know, I know I have this depression, and then I continue on with my life with it in the back of my head. 10 years go by, 2018 or 17, I think it was 18. I went through a phase where I knew that I was just like very, 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 very happy. What I thought it was that my two antidepressants that I was prescribed were like really, really like hitting their full strength, fully integrated in my body. You know, they was working well with each other, you know, a coordination of benefits type situation. And it took me like a couple weeks of seeing like one symptom after another. Like first it was like, I'm really feeling happier than my normal. Like, I'm really feeling optimistic. Like, I'm really looking forward to, like, seeing people and going out.
Yeah.
And being spontaneous. And I was like, whoa, wait a minute. This ain't normal behavior. Even when I'm happy, I ain't this damn happy. And then the energy came. I didn't even realize how many things I was doing.
I do remember you being real active last summer, either last summer or the summer before. You were like doing like six different projects at once.
Okay, so then it's like 10 years passes by with just this diagnosis of major depression. Here I am with way more energy and happiness than I have had in years. I mean, I was ambitious. I thought that that was like behind me. I was so excited. Everything that I thought could come true, I was like actively working on. Like Tina was like astonished because she thought that my cocktail of medications was better than hers. Yeah. And she was looking forward to the day where she had struck the correct balance of the dosages.
I forgot about that conversation. Because she was all productive and stuff, like doing all these things in one day, like completing all her tasks. I could still barely leave the house. She was like, starting like multiple businesses in a week, meeting with 76 managers.
Oh yeah, that happened too. Oh yeah, that was the fifth business that I always keep forgetting. So that's actually a subset of my umbrella company. Now, see, here's the thing, guys. When I'm feeling like this, I really feel like I can accomplish all these things, and it's hard to separate the condition from the person when you're living with bipolar, because it's like, in my heart of hearts, I do believe that those things could come to pass. You know what I mean? Just like if you're playing a sport or you want to play a sport. I'm not even going to do that because that's just the American dream stuff. But you're playing a sport. You're already in there. And you want the world championship. You know?
Yeah.
You have to do more than just want it. You have to believe it in your heart. Like, I remember one time Shaq and Charles Barkley were bidding on Inside the NBA. And I remember Charles Barkley had said something to the effect of, man, that's impossible. It ain't no way that this team is going to come back from this deficit. I would have already gave up because it ain't no point. And you know what Shaq said in response? He said, that's why you're not a world champion.
Yeah. That's true, because, yeah, I read the book, The Secret, and I do believe there's something to that, like, it's all about mindset, but, that's why I wonder, too, like, do you really think it was things that was out of reach, but then that can be, it's confusing when you have a diagnosis like that, because it may have been things that were in reach, it's just, maybe you started doubting yourself.
Exactly. It gets very, very confusing, and I can, like, you know, not to compare myself to, like, you know, a creative genius, or to even say that my crazy levels up with, like, somebody like Kanye West, but, you know, like, that's my man's, like, you know, like, we bringing this crazy back, making it cool, you know, so I digress. I kind of empathize with some of the things that he says, just in terms of, like, it's that kind of fuel that can get a lot of things going.
Yeah.
That the dreams are still, like, the aspirations, the person is still the person. It's just, like, accelerated. It's just out of order.
Yeah.
It's just without balance. It's with reckless abandon is the problem.
Yeah.
So the goal ain't, there's nothing wrong with the goal that you set. It's just that if you're not approaching anything realistically, then you're just not, you know, you at some point, you know, some unforeseen occurrence is inevitably going to happen, and you're going to fall short. The thing about it is, once you do kind of fully execute some of the manic behaviors, sometimes things come crashing down because your body can only take but so much.
Okay.
So that's the problem. So I'm very happy with waking up after I only slept for 4 hours. Man, this is amazing. I feel like one of them farm girls. I can actually do 3 or 4 hours of work, 5 hours of work, 6 hours of work in the morning. You know, I'm like baking cookies and I'm doing everything under the sun, child. Like, Tiz wasn't lying when she said I was doing too much, man. Like, I'm like, you know when they say like when multitasking goes wrong? It's just the same principle.
Because it's like some similarities with our diagnosis, and then I can see where it spreads, their separate ways. Like, because like depression and anxiety is I feel like it's a package deal. It's also attached to people with ADD, and it's like I go through the depressive moods, but I don't necessarily go through like manic moods, like where I'm over elevated, but I certainly understand the feeling of the underachievement and the underdog. I know that very well.
Right.
And then the way you explained it, when you were saying how you, like, things are out of order, like, you, when you're in your manic phase, like, there's so many things you can accomplish, but it comes to, like, a halt, and it's, like, similar with ADD, like, for people with ADD, when you're functioning well, like, you can get so many things done, but it's, like, everything is, like, all over the place, it's organizing your thoughts to function well.
Yeah, exactly. So what you can end up becoming is, like how that meme is, when it's like you figured out, like you become that crazed detective that dives into the cold case and, you know, spends sleepless nights, you know, uncovering information and going back over forensics. Yeah. And you got a little sticky notes and pens for every location where the perpetrator's been. But you haven't slept in 3 days. So, you know, you haven't showered in 3 days. You've only drank like 10 ounces of water in the past 2 days, you know? And then the line gets blurred between sanity and insanity because you're then going into like a slight psychosis just from the sleep deprivation alone.
Okay. So, yeah. So that's interesting. Yeah, because there is some psychosis that comes with bipolar. Or, like, would you say, like, hallucinations and things?
Absolutely. And we'll get to it a little later. But, like, much like the clinical depression diagnosis that we were talking about, there are we were talking about bipolar having many forms, but there are forms of major depression as well. I don't think we talked about that. Whichever one we didn't talk about, we'll talk about later. We got a lot to talk about. But yes, psychosis is an accompanied possibility because things can go unchecked. Like I said, if you don't have like a confidant to remind you to stay grounded, then you will go off on your own device. And that was like a lot of the reason for my downfall. I didn't like ask for help and I didn't like put myself in a position, like I estranged myself from loved ones. That's what you do when you're depressed. So then when you're feeling great, why do you feel the need to pick up and reconcile then and there, you know? So you end up going through, then you crash and you're back down depressed again. So all the time you could be isolated because you may have not resolved things when you were feeling well enough to do so.
Yeah, I know that feeling as well.
Mm-hmm. So. But yeah, psychosis is real. Like I said, paranoia unchecked, hallucinations unchecked, it's going to lead to that. And that single-mindedness, that hyper-focusedness that we also share with you during that manic stage, is also similar to the ADD diagnosis. That would be one manic trait I feel like we share.
Yeah.
But we can only do that shit for short stints. That ain't us. Y'all can tap into that shit voluntarily. For us, it's just a feeling that comes over us.
Oh, no, it's not voluntarily.
Oh, I'm sorry.
But the hyper-focus is like just something that draws our attention. And that's what we're interested in. Like, it could be voluntarily, like, if it's, like, a game, like, I want to go start playing this game, but then I end up playing it way longer than I intended to. But, yeah, it's not, I wouldn't necessarily say it's voluntarily.
And I apologize. See, this is really dope, y'all. You see how, like, I'm what, a host or something? I'm you know, and I don't even know, you know, the ins and outs. I'm still learning about my friend and still learning about these diagnoses and have to correct myself from the presumptions. And not even the presumptions, but sometimes when we say stuff, we say what we don't mean, and then it's good to get it clarified because it's like, okay, yeah, for some reason my mind couldn't say that, but yes, I needed that to be reiterated.
Yeah. Learning about each other.
Uh-huh. And I think the singularity with mental illness is that once we do harness these abilities, like how it is on Heroes and all the other superheroes, you know, once we are able to harness and control them, if that is the next level, then we really are leveling up and doing super heroic things at will. But that's the goal. That's the goal in my mind, you know.
Positive qualities to like every disability. I feel like once you really understand it, because like you can really use it to empower yourself, because like it's just different ways of going or of doing things. So that's why they call people with mental health issues creative. Most mental health diagnoses, they call people creative.
That was certainly an interesting ride. And I thank you guys so much for listening. That was a journey into the depths of my mind. If at any time you guys are interested in more information, then please feel free to contact us. We're here as, you know, a safe haven for people who might feel isolated and don't know that there are other people who are experiencing the very same things, and we're all looking for better ways to function and do things. So I hope that in doing this, it helped to bring some joy to your life. It wasn't meant to be a downer, just meant to be honest. Again, we look forward to our next exchange next Wednesday. Thank you.